All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is Into the Apocalypse. I'm here with my co-host, Chudex. It's 8 a.m. Thursday morning. I like these early shows, man.
Yeah, this is kind of rad.
Yeah, it's good for guys like us. I don't think Deborah likes doing 8 a.m., but for us, it's perfect. I've been up for 2 hours, you know, so.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I actually slept in today.
Yeah.
I've only been up for an hour and a half, which is really, really late for me. Hey, yeah. Emily.
Hey, I'm really excited for you guys to come and stay with us.
Yeah, me too. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I put it on the calendar at my work.
Yeah, we got it on the calendar too.
I blocked off my work schedule too.
Awesome. Yeah, we're going to have a blast. That's going to be a good time.
Yeah. What is it? August 2nd through 4th. Get out of here.
I'm a part of your life, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. I think early August, so that should be fun.
Yeah.
We're going to make some sausage. It's going to be hot here. Hopefully there'll be some water in the creek. We can go splash around. Maybe we can drive out to Astoria, see some sights, get some clam chowder if we want, or just hang out here the whole time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All that sounds awesome. I've been wanting to come down that general way with just my son. We've been talking about going to Long Beach.
Yeah.
You ever go to Long Beach?
Yeah.
You ever been to Marshall's? Fuck, I can't remember the name. It's got a goofy name. It's like Marshall's Nickel Arcade or something like that.
No, I haven't. I've only driven up there. Last time Deborah was here, we went up and got clam chowder and then drove over. We'd never been over that Longview Bridge from Astoria. So, or Long Beach Bridge from Astoria.
Yeah.
So we drove up and went through all those little towns. It's pretty cool up there.
They've got that Marshall's place. It's basically a Bigfoot museum.
Oh, well, we should go.
Yeah, it's got that weird name because it's just old junk and stuff.
Yeah.
And with that, they have all these old like Nickelodeon type things where you put in a nickel or a penny and you put your face up to it and you can turn a crank and watch like a man being eaten by a shark.
Yeah.
Like weird stuff like that. These other things that you put in a nickel and like a curtain pulls open and there's automated puppets inside that'll act something out and then the curtains close again.
Yeah.
And then
they probably got it from like Astoria. They probably had like arcades there. They might have had some up there because it was like a tourist spot probably way back in the old days.
So the whole place, if I remember right, it's been a long time since I've been there, but the whole place was lined with those things. And then the inside was like, it's all this taxidermy stuff that's really weird shit, like two-headed goats and animals with three eyes and like anomaly looking taxidermy. Last time I was there, I was like, yeah, this is probably all just fake, you know, like just like taxidermists like fucking with people kind of stuff. Their highlight is Jake the Alligator Man, which is like, it's like a short alligator body that like then has, it's like a mummified baby attached to it. So it's like half this like weird mummified, like turned black, crazy baby torso that goes into an alligator body.
Weird.
Like you, after you've seen it, you start driving.
Oh, you froze up, Chud. Hold your thought.
Driving around this area and start noticing Jake. Okay. Everything looks good on this side.
So you start driving around this area and you notice Jake.
Jake the Alligator stickers on cars and stuff like that. And t-shirts. It's like everyone who goes to Marshall's gets a sticker or like we have a refrigerator magnet and I've got a t-shirt from the last time I went. It's kind of rad. It's got Jake the Alligator Man like sitting in the woods and there's Bigfoot behind him.
Awesome.
Yeah, and they got a bunch of Bigfoot stuff. Like, yeah, I'm kind of want to go check that out again. It's been a while and I have a different view of cryptids and things like that than I did last time I went.
Yeah, there might be something of value hiding in plain sight amongst a bunch of fakes.
Yeah.
Like something that's real in between a couple jackalopes.
Yeah, exactly. So that should all be pretty cool.
Yeah, it's going to be good times. How's everything going on the farm?
It's going okay. Pretty good. I mean, it's going good. We got our 26 meat birds. I think I might have mentioned that a couple episodes back.
Yeah, you got them outside.
They're outside now. Well, actually, those were the day I said that I put some outside. Those were the ones that we hatched from our flock. That was 19 of those. And then we got 26, right about that same time, we got 26 meat birds, maybe 2 days before that. And we're down to 23 already.
Yeah.
We lost three of them.
That's what Lanny said on the episode we did the other day.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that's a bummer. But, you know, that's not too bad. I think everybody else is going to do okay. There's one kind of runty guy in there, or gal. I don't know. But it seems to be doing okay. So I think at worst, we're going to end up with 22.
Cool. Yeah, we lost, I think, three when we did it, too. I think we ordered 12. They sent us 13, and we ended up with 10.
Yeah.
So
that's to be expected. It's all
yeah.
Occupational hazard. You lose a couple chicks here and there.
Yeah. Yeah. I finally got ours fenced back in. It sucks because they've been after that one got.
Yeah.
So they've just been free ranging, like you asked me on that one show, mm-hmm. but they've been hiding eggs. So I was down to, you know, we had 11 birds and I was getting like four or five in the laying boxes a day. And that was down from like almost, you know, like 10 a day. Mm-hmm. And so, and they might've just like, once they started going in the spring, they might've just really been going for it. And then now they might be like kind of evening back out, but who knows? But I got that fence up. So they're all fenced in and not roaming around in the pasture. And, I'm back up to like seven a day. So
well, that's good.
Better
that's
numbers. Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a huge clutch of them somewhere and right. I don't know where it's at. So,
well, if history's taught us anything, they're probably in some blackberries.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of like overgrown trees and stuff in their chicken area that I might trim back. One of the trees in there fell over when it snowed. So I got to go like make a burn pile in there. So yeah. Search around and trim stuff up and look for them now.
Yeah, I've probably got a few hiding around outside because I haven't found a single one outside this season.
Yeah.
So that means that there's at least a few.
Yeah. 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 You want to hear a really cool email that I got yesterday?
I'd love to. Yeah.
Okay. Let me switch to the Deborah Gets Red Pilled email. But yeah, I'm really excited for you guys to come down. Hopefully it'll be really nice weather. We'll have everything a little bit more organized. We're getting our last bid on an HVAC system today. So that's going to be done. And then we've agreed verbally with another contractor and we're getting a bathroom added, like just a little guy with a shower, super basic, but yeah.
Like so popped out or in the existing structure?
In the existing structure, we have a big mudroom that used to be a porch. Mm-hmm. And so we're just going to like section off a 5x7, 35 feet of that to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah, really good. And then we can remodel the other part, the other bathroom. We can't remodel the really terrible bathroom because we only have one bathroom, you know? Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you outhousing it for a little while.
Yeah, no showers and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Okay, here it is. This is from Dana. He says, "Hi, Adam. Just wanted to write and say how much I appreciate your podcast. It played a huge role during a very pivotal time for my wife and I. We were very close to getting the jibby jabby last year in order to save our jobs. My wife works for Kaiser Permanente in Hillsboro, Oregon, which is right over the hill from us, about 45 minutes away. I work for a small manufacturing company. When I heard you on your podcast say that not taking the shot was the hill you were willing to die on, that flipped a switch for me. I got home from work and talked about it with my wife, and we decided to make the same stand. Fortunately, she was able to get an exemption, and I was never forced to as well. But we have a plan in place if that should change. Keep up the great work. You may not see the impact you're having, but you definitely are. P.S. Tell Deborah she seems like a wonderful person, and I love the chemistry between all three of you. Take care, Dana.
Wow, thanks, Dana. That means a lot. That, holy crap. That's, yeah. To me, that's life-changing for Dana and his family.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really happy that I could help him out like that, because there's so many people that just like got that first initial threat was so scary to them and just went out and did it. I know, because I guys I worked with did it. And then mm-hmm. Guys that said they weren't going to do it, just like as soon as the company sent out an email saying that we needed to by December 8th, or we were being put on administrative leave, just ran out and did it, you know?
And then it turned out that they didn't need to.
They walked that back ever. Without even saying anything. That just went away.
That happened to so many people outside of your company that you were working for. I mean, everyone was just scared into doing it. Everyone who wasn't scared by the general fear, then they were told by their employers that they needed to do it. And that was enough to get a whole bunch more people to do it. And then so little actually came of that yeah. All these people got it and turned out they'd never needed to. And now I don't know about you, where you're at and people you're in contact with, but I know of four cases off the top of my head of people who are relatively close to me, who are all at least triple, if not quadruple jabbed, who've tested positive in the last 2 weeks.
So crazy. It's so crazy that it's even still a reality to some people. Like it's not even in my purview. Is that the right word? It's not even in my life. There's not a day that I think about it. Like it just doesn't, it seems like it's not real anymore. And I think the only people that are these people that are testing positive, are they like super sick or are they just like testing themselves
over and over?
Yeah.
Until they find out. Well, like I think it's a little combo. I think that some people get sick and then they test and maybe
what kind of sick are they getting though? Like,
well, sniffles? Okay. So here's what's no. Okay. In my particular cases, let me think. If I go over it, there's like one that had a sore throat, but was also throwing up. One that never had any respiratory throat, anything like that, but was incredibly ill to their stomach. Both people tested positive. And then from the one that never had any respiratory problems, someone that they're close to tested positive, no symptoms. And then the other person got really sick, a fever, no respiratory problems, tested positive.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't know. I really want to know how many times each of those people tested to get their positives.
Yeah.
You know, like does one person test not feel well and they test positive and then everyone around them goes, oh, I got to make sure I don't have that. And they do it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And then even if they don't have symptoms, do they tell people they did just to make it make more sense in their head?
The person that I know most recently, besides Deborah's sister, mm-hmm. got it on a cruise ship after being quadruple medicine. The other person I know showed no symptoms, tested, got 5 negatives, just kept testing. I think their boyfriend had worked in a kitchen or something and had tested positive. And then, so they kept testing, 5 negatives. And then the 6th one was a positive. So they had it, but no symptoms or anything. But I mean, at least they were a true believer and like took precaution and like mm-hmm. didn't go, you know, on an airplane or something. I don't care if they did, but if
right,
but if you like, that's what you're preaching, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It becomes even more dumbfounding to me when someone, you know, just they don't have symptoms, they tested positive. Or they do have symptoms, they tested positive, and then they go about, well, but I still have to go to the grocery store or whatever. You know, it's like, I don't know. No one was testing positive a long time ago, and nobody was going to the store because we were all locked down, you know, but we didn't all have access to these tests yet. You know, I'm thinking early, you know, mid 2020, when we were only doing PCRs, because I also assume, I'm assuming with all of these positive cases, all of them at this point in time, they're not PCRs. They're home tests.
Rapid tests.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't really think of that till we talked with Deborah and she was going over the.
Froze up again. Hold on. Okay, so you're saying you hadn't really thought about what kind of tests until Deborah started talking about the cruise ship.
Yeah, I just imagined it, like, I was like, wait, they had a PCR test on the cruise? That's crazy. But then you guys were like, no, it probably would have been those rapids. And I'm like, oh, right.
And I don't even know how those work. Do you like put those in your mouth? Like, are they a swab in your mouth? They're the ones that look like pregnancy tests.
I assume that you put a swab in your mouth, but if you want to be more accurate, it goes up your anus.
Yeah, it's rectal. So
people would love to bend over for that, I'm sure.
Yeah. I had to take one PCR test to go get surgery.
How'd they take it? Nose?
Up my nose, yeah. I was like,
your brain.
There's like a minor league baseball stadium out in Hillsboro. Uh-huh. I had to like drive out there. I got my vasectomy reversed. Uh-huh. So like pre surgery, I had to go 3 days before. And this was summer of 20, like early summer. Uh-huh. Like just about 2 years ago right now. And I had to go wait in line, but then they had like the special sections for like people getting surgery. So like there's just people there taking tests. I don't know what for. And then there was the surgery line where I didn't have to wait or anything, but yeah, it was really, really uncomfortable.
Yeah. They went up really far, right? Like that's what I heard over and over again, was that it was uncomfortable. I heard it from people who were doing it, who believed in all of this stuff. So they were going, yeah, it's uncomfortable, but it's well worth it to know. And you know, whether it's positive or negative, it's well worth it.
Yeah.
Of course, we now know that they're, all those PCR tests were full of shit. Like,
I mean, yeah, the cycles were all ramped up and yeah.
And what's his name? Mullis.
Harry Mullis. Yeah.
Like, I've heard a quote from him where he was saying that this test was early as he was recognizing. He's like, I don't know, man. I feel like this is proving some Buddhist theories, because it seems that we can find anything in anyone. If we do high enough cycles, like we can find every particle of everything. It gives the idea that the universe is all one, that everything is always everywhere. But that was like early in his development of it. I think before Fauci ever got his hands on it or anything, that he said something to that effect. It's wild that we went through all that with the AIDS shit, and then we could jump up to now. And what do you bet? If this monkeypox follows through and becomes a thing, we're going to use the PCR to determine whether or not people have monkeypox.
Oh, it's already the CDC recommendation.
Yeah, I know it is now, but I'm talking
agenda. Yeah,
but wouldn't you think that if it became a thing now, like a real, 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 a pandemic of monkeypox,
because 100 gay dudes who've been going to pride parades have gotten it. But
yeah, watch, we're going to lock down just the gay community.
Might be accurate.
But don't you think, and it's not going to happen like this, but don't you think at this point in time, if we were using the PCR again, enough people would be like, wait, but didn't we find out that that was inaccurate?
Yeah.
Don't we need to come up with some different way to determine whether or not someone has a completely different virus than we were doing this? I don't know.
Yeah, I know you're not asking honestly, because you know the answer.
I unfortunately
nobody would say anything, because though the CDC said that the PCR test is inaccurate, they're like, remember, it was like at the end, it was like last fall or something, they're like, mm-hmm. they're like, the PCR test doesn't work, it will cease to be the official testing method in January.
Yep.
But exactly. But until then, we're going to use the one that doesn't work.
And I bet if you followed that, I quit looking at graphs and charts. I quit the Tom Woods method of dealing with this, which is cool. I'm glad that he does that. I'm glad that there are other people who do it too, because it really shows the fallacy. But it comes down to that people don't mind being hypocrites. we've learned that so well. Like, inconsistencies, on particularly on the left, don't matter. That's, I think that's got a lot to do with why I'm not a libertarian anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
and why the left is in power.
And why they're in power, because they don't care. Like, yeah. you catch you or me with an inconsistency, and I know it's gonna fuck with me.
We're gonna like lay in bed at night and be like, Jesus, man.
Yeah, damn it. I got on a podcast and I blew the horn about something and I was wrong. Like, that sucks.
Yeah, I gotta like talk to that guy first, and then I gotta like issue a retractment on the next show, and like, yeah, there's none of that.
But they're just like, oh, that was wrong. Let's move forward, you know. Yeah.
Let's use the momentum that we got through that untrue statement that we knew was untrue, and keep going and do until the next one that'll get us that much further, you know. And that's how you gain and stay in power.
Ridiculous. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, fuck all that shit. Let's not talk about COVID anymore.
Yeah. So I'm really happy that you scheduled this one. You scheduled another one coming up. It's taken some pressure off me. And then Lanny scheduled the last one. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool. She sat in for that one too.
Yeah. That lady is really great. Like a nutritionist that I trust, that's all like low carb and then is into Tartaria.
Hell yeah. I can't wait to listen to it. Lanny has told me very little about it. She's kind of doing I want you to hear it from the listener perspective. I don't want to tell you all about it and then listen to it kind of.
It was like a good primer. And we did a lot of technical nutritional talk, and we didn't get to go down any specific conspiracy health rabbit holes too much, but we definitely touched on some. So it'd be great to have all of us back on with her about like a couple subjects where we could really dig into something like Kellogg or something like that. So
yeah, that sounds really good.
Yeah. But what did you want to talk to do the solo show for today?
So I want to talk about something that I personally find to be really gay. That's not space.
Okay.
I want to talk about friendship.
Yeah. Friendship.
Yeah. Friendship is a fickle beast in my head. You know, I've kind of struggled with it over my whole life. Not actually friendships at all, but like the term friendship and things like that. I when I was little, I had issues with like, I don't know, almost jealousy of like, someone's my friend. No, they're my friend, you know, kind of a thing when I was real little. I think a lot of people had that. But then in my like 20s, I became kind of, I got to where I didn't really like the term friend. Like I thought it was kind of stupid, particularly at some point people started using the term BFF, you know, best friends forever. And that's, I was always just like, gay. That stuff is so stupid. Yeah. I got friends, you know, sometimes I'd say, I don't have friends, like friends is stupid, but I have all these acquaintances. You know, this would have been a time where I was at a bar, you know, 5 to 7 nights a week. And, you know, I knew tons of people, like tons of people, too many to even remember, especially when you're drinking all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, people would tell me like this one guy that I played a lot of music with, like people would often say like, oh, you guys are like best friends, you know? And I'd always be like, are we, I don't know. Like, we just spend a lot of time together. We play music and, you know, do all this kind of stuff. And I kind of drifted away from like ever wanting to use the term friend, let alone what I really thought was gay, was best friends. But I started using it again at some point for a friend of mine who's a lot older than me. He's my senior by about 25 years.
The guy that owns the restaurant you work at, right?
Yep. And I worked for him 22 years ago or so, was when I first worked for him. And I haven't worked for him for over 22 years.
Like, when you were a freelance dishwasher.
I was freelance dishwasher. That's right. I just showed up and clocked in under someone else's name, and and he was going to pay me cash. He was a roommate, had a broken toe. And I did that for a few days in a row before meeting the owner of the place, who was super pissed off at me. for what the fuck are you doing in my restaurant kind of a thing. And then he heard the music I was playing on the stereo. And
Hawkwind.
It was Hawkwind. That's right. And he ended up saying, okay, let's talk about this after the shift. Cause it was busy and there dishes were piling up as he was yelling at me. And then we ended up drinking until, 3 in the morning or some shit that night and bonding over music. And he hired me. I was still working at a wood shop, I think, at the time. Yeah, I was working in a door and molding shop, doing customized interiors for houses. And so I was working that during the day. And then I'd go in at night and he would, like maybe just 3 nights a week. And he'd always be there on my shifts. And he'd stand next to me while I was working and drink and listen to music, play me music. And I'd play him stuff. And, I was getting paid the whole time. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
And eventually, I couldn't keep up with doing that because there was a lot of hours. I was working more than full time doing the wood shop, which was actually heavy, demanding work. And then I'd get off and have 2 hours to get drunk before going in to wash dishes. And what really sucked was over time, we stayed good friends, but we drank. I mean, we were drinking buddies. We were definitely enablers to each other. We both had severe drinking problems and we really fed that on each other. But oddly enough, we had kind of a blowout at some point, where we didn't talk to each other much for about 5 years. And both of us got sober during that time separately. And then we kind of started getting back together a bit. And now we spend a lot of time together again. But somewhere in there, I started using the term that he was my best friend, because the truth was he was much closer to a father figure to me. He really helped me through a lot of different stages in my life, figuring things out. I don't know. He was always encouragative of me, doing business endeavors, and he would offer me any information that he had. And, he'd started his own business twice, and, he had good info for me. And, I now think I should have picked up the term mentor. I think I did try to use that, but of course we both listen to the mentors.
Yeah. So. They're not really someone to look up to.
So it was
fun to listen to every once in a while. Not really, but
yeah, kinda. Yeah. It's more fun to tell people about than it is to actually listen.
Yeah.
To
tell somebody to go watch the video of them on Springer or Donahue or whatever.
Yeah, totally.
I think Seattle's finest right there.
I've got one of their records, that's called The Mentors versus Schick Schadel.
Yeah.
You remember Schick Schadel?
No.
It was a Seattle based, recovery, facility.
Oh yeah. Schick. Yeah.
I'm sure it's shut down by now because it was fucked up. The whole thing was, is they provided you with drugs and alcohol.
Okay.
And you would come to their facility and get fucking hammered.
Yeah. So it's wasted. It's like harm reduction.
Yeah. They'd get you, they do it for, I think their program was 72 hours where you can do anything you want and really fuck yourself up. And then we'll help you with recovery after that. We're going to force you into rock bottom while you're at a facility. And then I guess all the mentors had been through this program and they came out stronger than ever.
Yeah.
More substance abusing than ever. They could do all the coke and all the booze and count and not hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
as they saw it. But yeah, me and this guy, we go way back. It's the reason that mentor would have been better, or as best friend is what I settled on. Was my father's alive and well, kind of well. He lives next door to me now, but we do not get along that well. We have very different views of the world. He has also not been much of a.
Okay, frozen again, Chud. Hold your thoughts for a second.
a mentor to me, my own father. He's
okay.
We doing good?
So yeah, you're back. Okay, so your father has not been much of a mentor to you.
No, he's more of a discourager of my endeavors in life. I say I'm going to do something. I mean, even all the way up to now, I don't want to talk about my family too much here because I'll get bent out of shape and it's stupid. But, you know, like we're out here on the old family farm and we're trying to bring it back to life. And he basically has nothing but discouragement for me on that. You know, he thinks it's a bad idea. He thinks it's a waste of time. We live in modern society, so we don't have to farm, son. You know, yeah. Kind of a thing. Not that he's ever called me son. So I felt like it would be really wrong of me to refer to my good friend as a father figure, even though that was much more, it would make much more sense. People would meet the two of us and assume that we were father and son. We had that dynamic. But it would be so disrespectful to my father to have a father figure who's not him. So I just settled on that term. He's not my father. He's my best friend. We just drink a lot together. And people would probably be like, that's a little weird because he's double your age at one point. Like at one point we took like a long road trip together. I think I was 26 and he was 52. So it was like this, like we were literally that summer, I was half his age, which I don't know. It just puts us into a weird spot to call it friends, not cool to call it a father figure. Mentors versus Schick Schadel and donkey dicks and all that kind of stuff. So we, but I just settled on that. And then fast forward and within that too, you know, I quit going to the bars. I don't really have a whole lot of friends anymore. I have more now since 2020 than I did in 2019. That's for sure. Because the lockdowns forced me to get out more. I think I told you that first time we met, it was the big joke of, oh, we're all supposed to like social distance now. Well, I've been social distancing for almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I just, after I quit going to bars, I lost all interest in talking to stupid people. And that was what most of my friends were. And not to say they were, I don't know, that makes me seem like I think I'm too smart or something. It's just having stupid conversations with people. Maybe that's a better way to put it. Yeah. They're not all necessarily stupid. Although, prove me wrong, post 2020, I think they're all pretty stupid now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know exactly what the conversation is going to be. And it's going to be some stupid BS that you got to bite your tongue about so that you don't, you know.
Yeah.
I know. We all get it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But then last year, I met you in real life, and that was there was something special about that. We've talked about that a couple times, both here and on a couple other podcasts. And that second time you came, I remember Emily and Lanny both saying, "Oh, look, they're best friends now." And I'd be like, "God, that's so gay."
Yeah. I mean, Emily's doing that on purpose to make fun of me and like try to embarrass me, you know.
And Lanny is too.
Yeah.
Only for me. But you know, I'm thinking about that more. I don't know, as we've discussed in recent episodes, I've been thinking about language a bit and words that it's not like I'm avoiding words for real, like homestead or Tartaria.
I'm not gonna not use homestead. I'm taking it back.
I'm using yeah, taking it back. Yeah, it was never, gone for like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But I do think there are better ways to think of the term or the actions that we're calling homestead. Same with Tartaria. It's not that I don't ever want to say the word. I still use it every single day. It seems to come up. Let's see, I'm losing my thread. I want to say that even though like like with those words, I'm trying not to use those words a little bit less. I'm just trying to be a little more refined with my language.
Yeah.
And then with that as well, like I should be bringing words in that I think are appropriate. And I think BFFs, you know, kind of works for us, or at least best friends,
yeah.
You know, because I truly feel that with you, this is the first genuine friendship that I have developed in like a decade.
Yeah.
It's different than an acquaintance. It's different than, someone who I get along with, but I don't see that often. Like we're seeing each other, at least via Zoom, several times a week. We're having great conversations together. Sometimes yeah. I'm kind of bummed because, like, oh, I really want to talk to Adam about this, but we only had time for a podcast. Like we yeah. it didn't work its way into the intro, and thereby, you know, like we didn't get to bullshit about this or that, which all of which indicates that this is a genuine friendship and even maybe in that category of a best friends situation. What do you think, Adam?
Well, I think we are best friends. Let's see. So yeah. Do you want me to kind of go over my, my history yeah. as you just did?
Yeah. I'd love it.
Okay. So yeah, I was always like a weird, you know, unsatisfied, disgruntled kid. And, just like always looking for something more. I always had, you know, I always had friends. I played sports and stuff like that. But, I'm going to reference a lot of AA stuff in here because I think a lot of the stuff they use to describe people before they get sober was totally me. There's a term where they say restless, irritable, and discontent. Mm-hmm. And that's describes my childhood up to being, you know, a couple years sober perfectly. I always had friends and acquaintances. I think people that I would always call my best friends back then were people that I knew. Like, I remember my first best friend was Drew, and it was because he was my best friend, even though we didn't live by each other anymore. It was because I knew him and my mom were really good friends. And we were friends since we were like two or probably younger than 2 years old, you know?
Oh, wow.
But I don't, you know, I haven't talked to Drew in 35 years. So, you know,
right.
But high school, I had a couple like really close friends and the same as you, everything was bonded over alcohol. Okay. You're frozen up a little bit. I'm just going to keep, okay, there you go. You're back. Yeah. All the bonding I did with people was through alcohol. And that's kind of like, was the learned behavior that would go away, Tweety, that would, keep going until I stopped drinking, you know? And, you know, later on, I always had older friends, but like not as old as you, guys that were a couple years older than me, because I never had like an older brother or something like that. And maybe that seemed like something I was looking for. So I'd always have like a really good friend who was like in college, I lived with this guy who was, he had come back to college like later, so he seemed super old. He was like 24 and I was like 19 or 20, and I would hang out with him, go to the bar with him and stuff, and that was my roommate for a while. And I when I moved down to the Bay Area after college, I was in like a really small kind of subculture that was, you know, it was like your popularity in that subculture was predicated on really antisocial behavior and like how yeah. good you were at that, which was like violence and like being able to drink a lot without acting really, really dumb. So I didn't have it in me to be super violent, and I could drink a lot, but I could not drink a lot and stay coherent or
not be stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was not very popular in that subculture. I was tolerated and kept around and stuff.
Can I ask, was this subculture, was this like a biker subculture?
It was a subculture inside of the punk rock subculture. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
What was your micro subculture? Is that what
I said biker.
Oh no, this was when I was a skinhead. So.
Okay. Got it.
And then I graduated from that, kind of outgrew that after 10 years of doing that and into a motorcycle club. And, you know, I was living in Oakland, California, and, I started working it. There's a motorcycle club there called the East Bay Rats. And they are like really cool guys around town. They were kind of like younger guys. It wasn't like traditional biker culture. It was like, they were dudes who had been like punk rockers. And then like, it was like sport bikes, like it was like ratted out, like Mad Max style sport bikes.
Sure. Sure.
And, so I started, the president of this club had owned two bars and I used to drink at these bars all the time. I convinced him to let me work the door at them. So I started doing that. And for some crazy reason at that time, that was like a status position. So I'd get to like meet chicks. I would get phone numbers. I would like, it's like the first time I really had to like do like real fighting. I worked at this place called Radio Bar. It's right under the Oakland Tribune building on 13th and Broadway in downtown Oakland. And it was gnarly, man. It was like a white kid, like hipster bar, but it was in downtown Oakland, and there, it was right by a BART station. So there was constant traffic, and there was a working phone booth right in front of like the door that I had to check IDs at. And so there was just drug deals all. I was fighting every time that I had to go work. And like that, I would the more fights I got into, like the more girls gave me their phone numbers and like stuff. It was really a bad way to like reinforce behavior, you know.
Already bad behavior being reinforced in the worst possible way.
Yeah, like being rewarded with what I thought was awesome at the time when in reality was like just even more and more degenerate behavior, you know.
Sure.
And eventually I get asked to join the motorcycle club. I go through the prospect period of a year. I get in the club and, you know, I'm just drinking really, really heavily at the time. I'm doing a lot of kickboxing and grappling. I was a bad drunk. I had a lot of friends at the bars. I was still blacking out all the time and making an idiot out of myself. So like, it was embarrassing to like have to show up every once in a while, and I'd deal with that by drinking more and, you know, just the cliche vicious cycle. And I had friends in my, like there's cliques inside the motorcycle club. So I had a group of like two or three guys in there that I was really close with, didn't like a bunch of the guys in the motorcycle club, and then just knew like everybody out at the bars would get drinks bought for me. And it was like, Oakland still seemed like a cool, like edgy place. It's not anymore. It's like, you know, the most gentrified place in the world.
And is it like that now?
It's awful.
Ah, man, that sucks. I just a side note. I don't want to derail your thought, but it was like 10 years ago, at least. It was before my first kid that there was a small, but steady pipeline from Bellingham to the Oakland area.
Yeah,
of punk rockers that I knew
who were like all moving. dirty black metal punk rockers, like that kind. Yeah,
that's that
like,
kind.
Yeah,
who are vegan?
Well, you know,
black metal.
We hated vegan. Those guys.
Like, yeah, and they all went there, and they'd come back, and I'd say, "What do you think of Oakland?" And they're like, "Oh, dude, it's so awesome. We're the salt of the earth by going there because the place is so fucked up, and like." We're in this like fucked up world. It's nothing like what you experience over here in Seattle or Portland. It's like you're so much more, the salt of the earth is what really stuck with me. Maybe only one person said that one time, but I was like, oh, so you guys are like, really think you're doing something by being a part of this fucked up culture. But it's interesting to hear that, you know, 10 or 15 years later, those guys gentrified the fuck out of the place. I'm sure that they were part of it.
Yeah. I forget who it was. Somebody from my motorcycle club. Some guy that there was a few guys that grew up in Berkeley and Oakland, but not many, you know. There's not many people down in, there's not many white kids in Oakland that are from Oakland, you know.
Yeah. If
there's
yeah.
a few, there's a couple guys I knew that went to like Oakland public high schools in the 90s. And that was like a bad, that wasn't that awesome to have to do that.
That was pretty fucked
and now,
up.
And now I think like Oakland public schools probably have like tons of honors programs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They wait. The Asian people, that's what they say. The Asian people are the wedge to get it in because the Asian people just send their kids wherever they live, you know? And then after the Asian kids go in, the white kids can kind of get in there.
Yeah. Interesting.
But, yeah, like all those like black metal, there was this bar called Bigham Silver Lion and we weren't allowed in there. Like the motorcycle club all hung out in there before I was like friends with them, but like my original subculture, we weren't allowed in. They would just like turn you around. It's like I didn't even know any of those guys, and I went down to Oakland once and I was like dressed up like those guys did, and they just kicked me out like without even doing anything. But yeah, so yeah, they were okay. So where was I at? I was
so Oakland.
Yeah, so I'm just like I've got a ton of drinking buddies, no like real tight friends, couple really good friends, but that's how I've always kind of been, a couple really close friends. But long story short, I get sober. I get in a really bad motorcycle crash while I'm drunk. Get sober. Phone stops ringing. And I lived over in Marin County where Deborah's from. I moved in with a girl over there who had a child, and I just start doing the whole recovery thing. And I'm weird and I'm awkward and I've always been real quiet, you know? And that's why alcohol was so appealing to me as my drug of choice, is because it could get me out of myself. Whereas if I like smoke, I hated smoking weed, you know, because it put me up inside my head, and I didn't want to be there at all, you know?
Yeah.
So, I just started being sober and like really, I really, really wanted it. You know, I knew, I've said this before, it stuck with me the first time I ever really tried AA. Most people go in and out of the AA tens of times before it actually works, if it ever does. And I was 32 years old, and I came really close to dying before that crash had happened. I'd always been like, oh, I'm probably going to die because of alcohol, and I don't really care. Mm-hmm. And then I came really, really close to dying. And I thought, okay, I don't want to die.
Yeah. Like
I got some stuff to do still. And so I hit it hard. You know, I did the whole deal. I got sponsor.
And you did cold turkey too, right?
Yep. Right off. And, yeah. I did it on my terms. And I think that's why it wasn't, I don't want to sound conceited or anything, it wasn't, there was no physical withdrawal, there was no real wanting to drink after I said I'm not doing this anymore for the last time. I mean, I got out of jail and went to AA the next day, you know.
That's awesome.
And that you
were able to turn on a dime like that.
The relationship I was in was pretty bad, as far as like drinking and drugs went. And, the girl I was with, like originally was happy that I did it. And then like, when she realized that I was going to do it and stay doing it, wasn't too happy. We broke up a year later. It was tough. And, but at that point I had found a group of like three young guys in Marin County AA that were like super awesome guys. And it was just weird trying to navigate this new kind of friendship where you don't have alcohol to like, even if alcohol can just like break up a conversation unawkwardly, you know, you can like, you know, just keep moving on. When you're talking to people sober all the time, it's weird, you know, and they're like trying to talk to girls for the first time without alcohol and all that stuff. So, I owe a lot to those guys. Those three guys like really showed me that there is friendship outside of the bar, and that, you know, we could tell like fucked up jokes and make fun of people in AA behind their backs and all that stuff. Yeah.
Have that loose and fast friendship that sort of seemed maybe only possible with alcohol previously.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, we were all, you know, scummy dudes. Mm-hmm. We're still kind of scummy dudes, but we're like doing it in like we're like good people now, you know, we're good people at heart all the time. And now we're like able to practice that in real life and help other people. And they were helping me, you know, one of them was my sponsor. And then the other two were guys that are just like, you know, we'd help each other. And like, I remember when I broke up with my girlfriend out there, I broke my foot at work, like right when I was supposed to start moving, and these guys like came and moved my whole place. They brought a bunch of like their sponsors who were like brand new sober AA guys and just like made them do all the work. And it was awesome, man. And you know, I continued, like when I got in another really bad car accident motorcycle crash when I first met Emily, and I was in the ICU at San Francisco General Hospital for a long time. I was still in my motorcycle club at this time. Nobody from my motorcycle club came to visit me. Emily came to visit me after I'd known her for one day. And then those three guys came and hung out in my room, you know?
Yeah.
And one of them was in my wedding party. And, you know, I've been to their weddings and stuff like that. So that was like a different kind of friendship, you know? And then I remained kind of loose friends with a couple guys in my motorcycle club. Oh, and then I have one really, really, really good friend that was an acquaintance. We drank together and stuff. We just kind of passed by each other, knew each other by name. We're in the same trade. We're both iron workers. And then when I moved back to Oakland after getting sober, we started hanging out all the time. And that guy's like what I would call my best friend, even though we don't talk very often. And he was my best man at my wedding, and he just got married. So congratulations, Jeff. And we'd go dirt bike riding, all that stuff. But we really had a good friendship, and we were able to like talk with each other for real about like AA stuff and what was going on with our feelings. And we're both like two, you know, tattooed tough guys that are all messed up in the head, but could like run stuff up off each other and just always hanging out. We rode motorcycles around all the time together. Just drank a lot of coffee, had fun. Yeah, same kind of thing. Like we're able to like laugh at people and tell jokes and all that stuff. So
that's the key for me as well. It sounds like for you, like being able to laugh and make fun of people is a key element to being good friends with someone.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, we were like making fun of people, but it's like there's nobody that we wouldn't like try to help if it came down to it, you know, as far as like sobriety and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But you know, I couldn't after a while I couldn't be in California anymore. I couldn't stand it. I saw the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
Oregon had always kind of been in the back of my head because I grew up for the, you know, the first part of my life here. And we came back, and I tried to do the AA thing here, and it was just we talked about how Oakland was and how it was all gentrified and super progressive. It was like, you know, like 2012, 2013 is when I first, I was living across the bay in Marin County. So I'd come back, they had a clubhouse in the real bad area of West Oakland. So I'd come back just for barely ever. They had meetings once a month. So I'd go to those. And then I'd come over and we'd watch UFC fights there. But that was about the extent of like hanging out with them that I did. And being away, when I came back, I was able to like notice how much it had changed, and then viewing it through a sober lens as well.
Yeah.
And that's when I first started noticing like this real woke ideology like creeping into Oakland, and like I was in this club and everybody was getting older, and you know, it was like a misogynistic, like it was like a frat with like tattoos and motorcycles and shittier beer, you know?
Yeah.
And I started being like going out to bars with guys, and then like realizing it was kind of cringy and being like, oh man, we're not like, we're not the cool guys in town anymore. Like it used to be like a status symbol to have that patch on. And now it's just like, oh, people are just kind of bummed when we show up. And it's just like, everybody's way younger and different, you know? And I was like, I see the writing on the wall. I got to get out of here. Like to be cool over there, you had to be like disabled and gay or something like that, you know?
Or at least really, really caring about people who are disabled and gay.
Yeah.
And ashamed of being male and white. And
yeah, exactly. Kind of yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though like we were living down there, like there's guys that were living in deep West Oakland in the early 90s when that was if you went through that, you went through some shit.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was like, we got to get out of here and move to Oregon. I tried to do AA in Oregon, super woke. Identity politics all over it. I was like, I can't do this anymore. Had a couple really good friends up here.
How far into AA were you at that point? Like a year?
6 years.
6 years. Okay.
Yeah. I'm almost 10 years. Next month will be 10 years.
So you were pretty stable
yeah.
on all of that by the time you went to Oregon.
Yeah.
That makes a big difference.
Yeah.
That's when maybe it feels a little more okay to let go of that.
It's a slippery slope, and it's a tricky situation because you'll hear throughout the whole thing, oh, there's this guy, he had 30 years, you know, he stopped going to meetings and then, you know, went out.
Yeah.
And that definitely happens. But the ones you always hear about the bad ones. You never hear about the ones just like, oh, some guy, you got 8 years, stopped going to AA.
And did okay.
He got married and has kids. He's
doing okay.
Doesn't drink anymore. Yeah. So as I don't want to be like, I need to stay vigilant all the time.
Yeah.
But like I talked about on a previous episode, the one I did with Allison Pillow, like little stuff like being dishonest with my wife or like not talking to people, isolating too much and stuff like that. Little stuff like that will add up and add up and add up and like start affecting my life to get me to a point where maybe 5 more years down the road, drinking does seem like a good idea or something like that. So
it is such a slippery slope. I started telling you something a few episodes back. I was talking about my drunk ass neighbor
that I do
work for. And the first time I think it was the first time I worked for him, he did one of those, like, I don't trust you unless you drink a beer kind of a things. And that was the last beer I drank. This was, 2020 or 2019. I can't remember if pandemic was burning yet. I think it was 2019 because he didn't have a mask. He's a mask carrier. I've never seen him wearing one, but he's always carrying one kind of a guy. And that was, I'm just going to demonstrate the slippery slope that I feel. And I bet it's similar to you, although I don't recommend doing this to anyone that's sober. I drank one beer and I drove my tractor home from his place and I had dinner and I was fine. And it was great. I was like, you know, I think I might be over this. Like, because I didn't think about beer or any other vices at that moment. Like, it was like, I did that. I was a little worried. I drank a Rolling Rock. I drove home and had dinner, but like by the time dinner was over and I was spending time with my kids and my wife, you know, it was like behind me and I was done. But it fucked with me for a cool 48 hours after that of me going, yeah, dude, I can do this. Yep. I can have a beer. I look what I did last night. Like, you know, like maybe I'll do that tonight. You know, maybe I should have one again. I still have I can see it from here, a case of Budweiser. It's probably about half full that I offer to people sometimes. Last few times they've said it tastes kind of weird because it's years and years old now. So like that next day I'm at work and I'm planning to have one beer because I proved to myself that I can do that. Yep. And then I realized, no, I can't do that because of this. And I didn't feel it so much in the moment of drinking that beer, but for the next couple of days, if I learned anything scientific from alcohol and drug information school, ADIS, I had to do that a bunch. it would be the opiates in my brain being activated, which I used to feel a lot when I drink one beer, because I went through a much different process than you. When I drink one beer, I'd get these, like, I imagine this thing spinning inside of my head that was like, I want more of that. I want to go faster. I want more booze. I didn't really get that day, but I had it for 2 days after of that. I really wanted to reconstruct my entire fucking life to be able to have one beer.
Yeah.
Like, and when I didn't do it the first day, then the next day I was like, no, see, this is what I'll do. I'll set myself up. And this is where my thought pattern went. I didn't speak any of this out loud. My thought pattern went, if I do this when I get home and I get myself like this and like this and like this, I can drink one beer. And if I wanted, I could probably finish that case and I wouldn't be in a spot where it would fuck anything up in my life. And I would be okay in the morning to even be a little hungover and this and that. And that's when it was just like, stop.
It's so crazy, man.
Stop. Holy fuck, man. Like, but that's that one beer.
That's everybody's, like, that's such a run of the mill story.
I know.
In the rooms of AA that people talk about. So
it's so classic. And I'm just glad that I'm able to see that. And that I was in that moment able to see that. And I just said, cool, I'm done. I haven't drank another beer since then. I don't think I will be taking anyone up on a situation where they're saying, you got to prove to me that you're a man for me.
Yeah.
You know, like, which, you know, he wasn't saying to be a man. He was just saying, I don't trust anyone. He was laying a lot of money on the line. Like he was paying me $200 an hour to do some work. And it was like, fuck, man, I don't want this guy to not trust me.
Yeah.
I want him to trust me, you know? So now he probably kind of thinks I drink. I don't think he thinks I'm a lush. He's offered me a beer every time.
He was doing that to you because he's drunk during the daytime and he feels shitty about it.
I'm sure. Yeah. He would love to pull me down. He would love it if I was over there every day or he was over here or whatever. And I see him go to a different neighbor's sometimes, like no shoes, like walking with a case of his roll. He seems to be a Rolling Rock guy, you know, walking over to the neighbors. Like he would love to be walking over here or me walking over there. Like he's a sad, lonely dude. Yeah. He has a wife, but he seems to hate her. He talks a lot of shit on his wife. Seems like everything that I do over there, I'm doing it because his wife fucks something up, you know? I don't know. It's he's a sad, pathetic dude, but he pays me $200 an hour, generally speaking, sometimes even a little more, like $200 an hour plus a $50 bonus if I'll, you know, clean this garden bed up or whatever.
Yeah.
And it ends up being, you know, very beneficial to me. So I don't know, you know, maybe it's good that I did. I think that it would have been fine especially if I told him, hey, look, man, I'm a fucking alcoholic. You know, like I just can't go there. I don't know. The question is, would it just tell him like, oh, fuck, I can't associate with someone who's of that mindset? Or would it have just been like, cool, I get it. I am too. I'm not doing anything about it, but I'll leave you alone on that. I don't know.
Who knows?
Honesty probably would have been a better method. I'd like to think everything would work out the same, that here it is a few years later. And I do work for him two to three times a year. And I always get paid fat. And it's very little work for lots of money. So it's worth it, whatever it is now. And nothing bad came of it. But I want to point out, I said that you and I came...
Frozen.
You turned on Frozen.
Okay, so sorry about that. Okay,
so you turned on a dime and went sober, cold turkey. I most certainly did not.
It took a catastrophic event though, like a real bad one. Like I crashed my motorcycle at like 75 miles an hour on the freeway.
That's catastrophic. That's huge.
Like crashed into the back of a car.
If did you fly off?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you end up in the hospital?
I mean, they took me to the hospital. Yeah. I was fine.
Yeah.
Bruised up.
Good thing you were loose.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. They took me from hospital, but you know, I wouldn't have crashed like that if I wasn't drunk.
Right.
I was 0.20 at 9 a.m. So
yeah.
Yeah. They took me to the hospital, made sure I didn't have internal bleeding, and then took me to the Martinez Detention Facility, Contra Costa County Jail, one of the most disgusting county jails probably in the country.
Oh, I'm sure that's Contra Costa County. That's negative land stomping grounds right there. Yeah. I know way too much about Contra Costa County from listening to way too much negative land.
Yeah.
But for me, you know, it, like I had some catastrophic events, I might have said, when I'm not right next to someone who crashed on a motorcycle at that kind of a speed. I crashed two cars, one car and one pickup truck, and neither of those did I get a DUI. I talked my way out of it. One of them, I had to do all the field sobriety tests, and I even told him that time I'd been drinking. He told me it smelled like malt liquor and whiskey, and I said, "You're pretty accurate." The cop did upon approaching me with a flipped over car, and I went through the whole thing, and at the end of it he said, would you like to blow into this thing? And I said, "Do I have a choice?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "No." And he said, "All right, a little more paperwork." And he was like, "You're on your way." And I was like,
that guy had something to do. Really? He didn't want to take you back to the station and fill out paperwork. He was about to get off shift.
And what did I do? I walked, some friends of mine had seen it from a house that I hadn't talked to for a long time, but they'd seen the crash and they came out. So they were like watching me do the sobriety test and all of that. I finished up. He said, "You're on your way." I walked over to their house. I went in and I drank until fucking 5 in the morning, until it was light out. I learned absolutely nothing from that in that moment. I did have to deal with the car, the impound, insurance, all that kind of stuff. And it kind of shook me, you know, like I probably thought twice before drinking a little bit at that time, but then I crashed again. It wasn't nearly as bad. But I didn't remember doing it at all. Like I didn't remember that I had left the downtown area. So that was like, really, I'm blacking out too hard. And then over the next like year or two after that, I was spending so much time in bars and I couldn't remember people anymore. I was like having people come and sit down to me and be like, "Dude, what you were saying about blah, blah, blah. Like I've been thinking about it for 2 days and like, let's keep this conversation going." And I'm like, "What was your name? I'm sorry. Like, I'm not a dick. I swear. I just have no fucking recollection of you or our conversation." And then I'd have another great conversation and forget that. Like, I was just like, by a certain time at night, everything was black. And I was waking up every morning, like at one point going, "Fuck, I don't remember yesterday or last night or the last hour or whatever." And try and remember. And I kind of got comfortable with that, to where it was just like, I don't expect myself to remember this shit. I just go and I fucking pop my mouth off at a bar for a couple hours and then I'm cool. But then, yeah, I think it would have been towards the end of that I had that second crash that I don't remember that. After that, I said, "Fuck, man, I've got a drinking problem. I got to quit going to the bars."
Yeah.
"I'm going to drink at home." And I did that with the exception of going to, I still went to shows and shit like that. And then of all things, I got popped with a DUI when I wasn't all that drunk by my standards. I think I blew pretty high, but I drank a lot. I would drink 20 beers a night, solid every night, and do shots throughout that as well.
Yeah.
I never did coke. I was very rarely did coke. But I smoked weed all the time as well. That probably had a lot to do with the blacking out back at that point too. But yeah, I got pulled over. I was, I, I was well in control of my vehicle, but I, you know, did a lane change and I started getting over the lane before I put my signal on, and the guy pulled me over just to check it out. It was a state patrolman, and I ended up in jail, and it sucked. And that was like the real turning point for me, because I had to go to AA and do ADIS, that alcohol drug information school, and outpatient therapy. And, you know, it was like 3 years worth of crap. I also had to get one of those blow-to-goes installed in my pickup truck.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah, that thing fucking sucked. That thing sucked because it would malfunction all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it would say that I was drinking when I wasn't. And it would, you know, because of, I don't know, like, I'd maybe from brushing my teeth, there's like something on my breath.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't know what it would be. They tell me, oh yeah, like even cinnamon rolls can set it off because the yeast in it will be enough to trigger it. So it would malfunction, and I would have to prove myself by staying in the vehicle and continuing to blow. And sometimes for like a half hour until it would register as sober. And then they'd call that good. I got docked once when I was doing that because I didn't have time. I had to get to work. So when it malfunctioned, I just caught a cab, got to work, did my thing, came back, started up fine. A month later, I was doing my regular appearance and they were like, what was up with this day? And I said, oh, I was in too big of a hurry. And they were like, okay, well, we're going to extend your probation and this and that, because clearly you were drinking. And so I was like, okay, I can't leave this situation. Yeah. But yeah, I went through all of that. And I was supposed to be sober. I was doing AA, and I'll be honest with you, Adam, I fucking hated AA. It drove me goddamn bonkers. I was doing the outpatient therapy and all of this stuff. I was having to do regular piss tests and all these things.
And just for a DUI.
Just for a DUI. It was like 5 years. It took for fuck. And I couldn't even tell you the figures anymore. I used to be able to rattle off how much all of this cost me. It's like that blow to go cost a bunch to install, and then a monthly fee, you know, like you're renting it. Plus I had to pay another one on top of that for them to send their reports to the courts and have regular court appearance. It was freaking bonkers. I have my own problem with that system.
Yeah.
I think that every step of it was wrong. But I, within that, I calculated my life very carefully. Even though I was spending probably 90% of my time sober, I calculated things to where, like, I'd go bam on the calendar, this day at this time I can get fucked up. Like, I'll have this window where I won't drive, I won't have to do all these things, and I can get fucked up. And I would, and I'd get so fucked up, like where I said before, like in the bars, I'd drink 20 beers and do shots all night. This is more like buy a couple fifths and a case of beer and just see how fucking wasted I could get. And it was some of the worst drinking I've ever done, which is really fucking lame, because I was kind of on the right path 90% of the time. But I just couldn't get over this. Like, I got to do it when I can. Sometimes it would be like going to the store after outpatient, because I would see this 3 day period of time so I could get wasted that night, and it would be all the way out of my system by the time I went in on Monday, you know, or whatever. And that was a pretty shitty way to go, but I made it through all of that. I finished that right about the time I met Lanny. And then I never drank full on once I knew Lanny, but she drank. And I would drink, like, it was kind of like weekends, you know, like, but I would tie one on just like I was doing. I would drink way too fucking much, like when I did, but then I'd be sober for several days. I think they call that like the binge alcoholic.
Yeah.
Like I transferred from the overblown nightly to the binge alcoholic. And thank fucking God, like, as I went through that, I started really feeling my hangovers. I started really like not enjoying the whole thing. You know, I was over the bars by then, before I met Lanny. We went to bars a little bit, but it was never the same. I never got into those fucking long talks and arguments that I used to do at bars. And my focus was all on Lanny by that time, which I could throw out in there too, if I'm just, you know, being honest about my life. Like right before I met her, I was extremely suicidal within all of this, like these ups and downs that I was feeling. I was not happy with life, and meeting Lanny was nothing short of a miracle. You know, literally like taking the noose off from around my neck and finding meaning in things, because I was really struggling with finding any kind of meaning in life at that time. But she kind of redirected that, and we partied a bit, but you know, we never really did drugs together, and we you know, just drank when we drank and then didn't when we didn't.
You froze up again, man.
And to get frozen again.
Yeah, you're good now.
Yeah,
you're good.
But yeah, as I started really feeling those hangovers, that was kind of the thing that finally, like, I was drinking completely different than I had 10 years prior, but it was enough to get me to just sort of slowly let that fade out. And you know, other than that one beer later, you know, it was kind of, I was definitely doing that whole thing. Like I was planning my life around when I was going to drink and how much I could drink and all that kind of stuff. But it, once it was done, it was done. And that was good.
Yeah. That's good that you were able to, and then, you were able to, you know, have things in life to replace it, and that you care about, you have a family and all that stuff. The way that I can kind of do it is I never thought, even in sobriety, when I lived in California, I was like, okay, I've got a $100,000 plus a year job as an apprentice. I'm never going to own a house here. Mm-hmm. And I got to come here and I have like a house. Now I have a farm and I don't have to go to work anymore. It's like everything good at every, and I have an awesome wife, you know, and like everything in my life that I love goes away like pretty quick. I'd say within a month it's like, yeah, on the way out. If I start drinking, yeah, like if I start drinking, I'm like, it's not very long until I drink like four beers and drive to a bar in St. Helens to try to find cocaine or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, with the cocaine, have you been, when you went sober, it's equal with drugs and alcohol, right? Like you've, yep, never gone back.
I did mushrooms once, but I'm still sober. I'm not changing my sobriety date for that.
I think that's acceptable to say. Like mushrooms, hallucinogenics in general are on such a different level if you're not on other drugs or booze.
Yeah.
I think it can be just combined with all of that when you are.
Yeah.
I microdosed from time to time. I did just a couple days ago and it wasn't that great. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's uneventful, as it was this time.
I'm glad I did it. I got it out of my system, and it's just like, I just sat there and it was pretty boring. The come down was really, really gross.
Did you take a lot?
I took a whole eighth.
Yeah.
I wasn't planning on it. And then like, I kept taking more, and I was like, while I was doing it, I was like, oh man, I'm taking these alcoholically. Like, yeah, I want more and more. I want to feel higher and higher and higher. Right. And I just came to the conclusion, I don't know what I was searching for. I was trying to have some sort of God moment or something. I realized like, I don't need to have that with hallucinogenics, like everybody else's, all these like new age people are talking about. Like, I don't need it. I can, there's some really good stuff in that little Father Seraphim Rose book I'm reading about people who are searching for a spiritual God experience instead of having one.
Yeah.
And like, it's just the constant search through doing drugs and stuff like that. And then like people like that actually have it. There's a couple of really profound things that stood out to me that reminded me of what I was looking for when I did that. So,
That's like when I do it, I never take nothing close to an eighth.
Yeah.
Like I don't weigh what I do. I have a friend who grows some like Hawaiian Cubensis or something like that. And he just gives me a little vacuum sealed pouch every once in a while. And I just take like a small one. It's probably like less than half a gram.
Yeah.
You know, like real, real small. And I always do it in the morning on a day off when I got a lot to do, like work wise around the place. And I always kind of forget that I've done it like an hour later. And then I typically, at the end of the day, I'm like, wow, this was such a great day. Like I always feel, I don't know. I just feel really connected to everything.
You feel better on the days when you got the exact same amount of work done on a day when you did it and a day that you didn't, you'd feel better at the end of the day on a day you did.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say so. Typically speaking, like I said, I just did it a few days ago. And at the end of the day, I was actually kind of in a shitty mood, kind of not belligerently shitty, but I was kind of annoyed by a few things, you know, I don't know. I've had other days though, where I've done it and it's like reflection on the day. It's just like, today was a fucking amazing day. Like, and I don't know. I don't put a whole lot of stock in it. It's almost more just a tiny experiment to see if there's anything to it. I've never given up smoking weed. I mean, I have by the standards of that. I used to smoke a lot of weed and now I don't do it every day. I do it only in the evenings, only like as a kind of a release valve. Once I feel really complete with everything I'm doing and I'm going to sit down and watch a movie or something. I at least see it as that it helps me clear my mind and just kind of forget about bullshit and instead absorb myself into the movie that I'm watching or whatever. Sometimes I play video games with my son after taking a little toke out behind the barn, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But it's certainly not a crutch like it was for me at one point. Not that I necessarily, I don't know. I have varying thoughts on the whether or not marijuana is addictive. I hear arguments
100% for a fact it is, I think.
Like, yeah, I think it is, especially if there are other substances involved. Like if you're an alcoholic and you smoke weed all the time, I don't think I could have gotten sober if I didn't quit smoking weed for pretty much all of that time. I was on probation. I had to pee in a cup all the fucking time. Like I went a long time there. I said that I never gave it up. I guess I did when I had to, but I've always kind of come back to it. I also don't smoke the shit that, you know, the fucking tinctures and the 95% THC.
You're not smoking really dabs.
Yeah, I ain't doing that's dabs.
Not, I mean, like that stuff that they have now, it's not pot, man. It's not, you're not toking some weed.
Seems closer to fucking heroin to me.
It's like, yeah, it's a different drug, man.
It's
I guess at Legion of Skanks, like last week, Big J Okerson had like a seizure on stage because they do it live. Like Nick Mullins from Come Town was there. Yeah, Big J Okerson it was a big guy.
Yeah.
Had a seizure on stage from dabs.
He was doing dabs and he fucking seizured out.
Yeah.
Holy shit. That's fucking wild. Yeah, I've never done a dab. I've tasted some of the vaporizer oil stuff. Not cool to me.
Yeah.
I'm more of a little bit of what someone might call shitty weed mixed with a little bit of tobacco and, you know, smoke that slowly and just relax with it. It's probably hard. It's hardly, I would say that I don't smoke weed compared to what I used to. Like I don't at all compared to what I used to, but I do partake every now and again. And, I don't think I've seen anything negative come from it. In fact, if my son knew I do it, which I don't draw, I've told him I do, but I've never told him I'm doing it. I've never shown him it or anything like that. But when it's come up, I've been like, oh yeah, I do that sometimes, you know, like
It's strange because it's legal now. So how is it to him? Is it like my dad drinking 4 Budweisers every day when he came home from work?
That's what it would be, I think, if I did it every day.
I mean, like that. If you said, like, is it equivalent? It's like taking a hit off of what we would call shitty weed now, which was probably a strong weed when we were 18. Mm-hmm. How is it, you know, to a kid who's grown up his whole life with it being kind of more out in the open? It's weird.
Well, I think it's important that I be a little in the open with them. Like, even though I'm not sitting next to him and doing this, right?
Because you don't need to hide it.
But if I hide it, if my dad drank 4 beer Budweisers every day and I never saw him do that, and he talked smack on it and made it seem like something he didn't do, that would be fucked up. And once I figure it out when I'm whatever age, I'd hate my fucking dad. You know what I mean? Like, I would be so mad that he lied to me, essentially. I mean, that's lying as far as I'm concerned. So yeah, I mean, I'm not toking a bowl on the couch next to my son. That's for damn sure. And in fact, if anyone does that, I think they're a fucking horrible person. But I also, like, it comes up on movies or TV from time to time, and he'll be like, yeah, that's dad. That's bad, right, dad? And he'll be like, well, I don't know. I do it sometimes. You know, it depends. I've told him my general philosophy is, I think it's fine as long as it doesn't make you content with boredom. If you're cool with being bored because you're smoking weed, you're a piece of shit. But I also kind of maybe function on this idea that there are people who are cool with being bored without smoking weed.
Yeah.
And those people are pieces of shit too.
It's what Joe Rogan says, you know?
What does he say?
It's the same thing he says. It's like, if you're going to be, because he smokes weed and is super active, and, you know, and he's like, if you smoke weed and lazy, it's because you're a lazy person. You'd be doing that anyway.
Well, shit. I smoked weed with Nick Turner from Hawkwind once. It was a highlight of my life. And he's old at that point. He's like over 70, and he's rolling up a joint and lighting it. And I was like, man, that's pretty cool that you still smoke weed. Do you still smoke weed all the time? He's like, yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. I've smoked weed. I won't try and impersonate him. Since I was a teenager, I've smoked weed every day of my life. And I was like, that's wild. Do you think there's anything negative from that? And he like took this.
You froze
this
up
big again. Hit off this joint, and he's like, looking, he's like, man.
Okay, so he took a big hit off
connection. He took a big hit off of it. He stared up at the stars, and he said, I have never had a lazy day in my life. That's where I get that term with it from. Because he said, I've never had a lazy day in my life. I've not only have I played music every day, but I have a farm. You know, he raised his own animals and all that kind of shit back in England. I have a farm that I maintain every day. And when any day that I'm not, I'm traveling and I'm talking to people and I'm a very busy person. And I don't think that the marijuana has negatively affected me in any way. And I was like, I get that. I think that's true for this guy.
Yeah.
But I think this guy would have been a productive member of society under any circumstance. The guy who's already okay with being lazy before he smoked weed. Yeah. I think we need to do whatever we can to make sure that person doesn't ever smoke weed.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's weird when you think about these, like, people are daily smokers for decades. Like, so that's your baseline, being high.
Yeah.
So like, being not high would be like being stoned.
Yeah. I bet that would be the case. You take someone like Nick Turner, 70 years old, we'll say he'd been smoking weed for like close to 60 years. Like every day.
Yeah. Or he'd be having like a full on edible freak out from not smoking weed.
He probably wouldn't do so well. So, you know, in that sense, I don't encourage it. I'm not saying that anyone should model themselves after Nick Turner, but I would point people towards someone like Nick Turner to say, maybe you should slow down on condemning the stuff if you're being super anti-marijuana. Because, I mean, for one thing, libertarian background tells me that people are going to do what people are going to do.
Yeah.
And when you double down on telling them they can't do something, it doesn't usually help.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge no agenda guy. And Adam Curry is like all day, every day.
Oh, is he? I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And that guy's super productive. You'd never be able to tell by listening to his show. And
yeah. Yeah, that's just it. I work with young guys, as I'm always talking about, and most of them smoke. I always recommend, I can tell when they come in and they are stoned. I'm always like, you shouldn't do that, man. Like my recommendation in general to them is like, reward yourself at a minimum, like hold back. You do way better at work. You know, I'm telling these individuals this, if I don't know that they've smoked weed and they're working, then they're fine. You know what I mean? But if I can tell, then you should probably back off, you know? And if I'm not saying don't get stoned, just don't get stoned and then earn and then go clock in and try and earn money. Like you're fucking over your employer at that time, who I've already established as a friend of mine. You know, like I don't want him to be paying you 3 extra hours to get your work done because you're slow and stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. All that makes sense. And yeah, it's a case by case basis. But yeah, like I said, I never, after high school, when I got to college, I think part of it when I got to college is when I started getting some real, we were pretty close to like Humboldt County where I went to college. I think we were starting to get some real, real powerful stuff that I wasn't used to. And then I had like responsibility to like do stuff on my own, you know. And I remember we'd like go down to this creek by the dorms and get stoned at like 2 in the afternoon. And then I would have to like, the guy that I did it with was a daily smoker. He was a white kid from Oakland. And he would go do his homework and I would just have to like go like freak out and lay on my bed in my dorm room. I'm like, I don't like the way this makes me feel. And like, I was actually, you know, I wasn't an addict or anything I didn't portray any sort of addict behavior with weed. It wasn't for me, you know?
Yeah. And that's great. Like you should recognize that. That's cool that you recognize that. I think everyone should be able to recognize when it's not for them. That's what I'm talking about. The people that shouldn't smoke it, they should be able to identify that themselves and shy away from it. But maybe I'm giving people too much responsibility at that point.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm being a little too autistic in my libertarian standing when I say that.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, getting back to like friendship. Yeah. We moved up here moved out here, and I don't have any friends out here, but I'm trying to like have a little bit of a community. So I know my neighbors and a couple other people out here. And then I have a couple friends in Portland that I could go. Actually, just one guy that I'll go hang out and watch UFC at his house every once in a while. One of my old jiu-jitsu buddies. And then, and then like podcast people, which, what do you think? Like, so we're really good, maybe best friends. What do you think? Do you think that true friendship can be had through Zoom? Because I listen to a ton of podcasts and I have friends all over the country. Are they my real friends? I listen to podcasts like Timeline Earth and stuff. And those guys have I think they have now, but they didn't done a show for years and had never even met in person and stuff like that, but like have a rapport and can make fun of each other, like friends that do know each other in real life. So what do you think about that?
So I think that you can, with a cautiously optimistic point of view on it, you can have absolute friends, like absolutely. Like Timeline Earth is a really good example. Those guys know each other for a long time. I think we could, if we wanted to take it out of the modern era, pen pal relationships go back, you know, hundreds of years, at least 100 years.
Yeah. I mean, there's hundreds of prison marriages based just on that.
People fall in love through pen pal situations.
Yeah.
And like, I think that people can really get to know each other simply. It's almost like a brain to brain kind of sense of things, you know, like you're just hearing the thoughts, but you're not seeing the actions of the person. And not only can you get snowed in that situation, in that someone could be false. Someone could be not what they seem to be. But also it might just wind up not being the same in person. You know, like I could see, I'm just making this up, but I could see someone, I'm taking it away from Zoom and modern era, like 100 years ago, two people fall in love in a pen pal relationship, but have never met each other. Mm-hmm. And then finally take a train and meet up together. And they're just like say they've fallen in love to the point where when they see each other, they go to kiss and they kiss and there's like no spark.
Yeah.
And they're just like, oh, damn, that sucks. And I think the same thing in modern time, like I have a whole network of people that I would call friends that I've met through podcasting. That's great. Like, I think friend is a decent word to use, but I also would caution anyone, like say if a whole bunch of us said, hey, let's all buy this property together in Idaho and we're going to start a fucking podcast ranch and we're all going to be homesteaders together and we're all going to live in the same place. Like, I don't think that's a good idea. Like, there's a good chance that once we meet and we all kiss each other, there's no spark. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's hard to believe that because this is more than pen pal. Like, we're seeing our facial expressions and we're expressing ourselves unabated. Like, we can say all the words. It's not just a letter that we're writing, but we can talk for 4 hours if we need to get our point across. So I think it's a little better vetting process than necessarily male correspondence. But I think that you can definitely have friends, but they're friends in this space. And then you should try to meet each other and hopefully you'll still be friends. You know, does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
In our case, we met briefly on Zoom.
Yeah.
But then that was cool. Like, I wouldn't have called you a friend or, I mean, maybe not even an acquaintance at that point.
Yeah.
You know,
like, we didn't really talk. We just kind of like,
yeah, we were just in the same,
yeah, just cyberspace at the same time. Sidebar. Yeah.
But then when I first met you, you know, whatever, we didn't kiss. So I don't know if we had that spark or not, but definitely by the next morning, you know, like I think I had to get up early and leave before you guys that next morning. And, you know, I'm at work and I was just like, wow, what a solid couple. You know, those people were awesome. Like, this was cool. I hope that we continue this. Like, I hope that wasn't just a one-time thing and I never see these people again. And I guess I knew by that next morning that we were friends, that we were genuine friends. And I think that would have been like, say if things had worked out different, we Zoomed that one day and then we jumped on a podcast the next day and we started this kind of thing for a month, we probably would have kissed when we saw each other. We probably would have felt that spark because, I mean, you know, fuck the kissing, but like there is that spark with you and I of that, like this is, when I saw you, I realized that you're someone that I want to talk to and be around. Maybe not when I saw you, but definitely by the next morning. And even just by that evening, you know,
yeah.
After we bonded over Crow and all that, we started our Buffalo said the other day, like, dare I call this a bromance when we were on there? I think since we bonded over Crow, we should call it a cromance.
Yeah, cromance. That's pretty good. You're frozen, so I'll keep talking until you're not anymore. But
that's when we started our crow, right?
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
As soon as it says my connection is unstable, I know I'm back.
Yeah.
Weird.
But yeah, I feel the same way, and it's weird because everybody that I've met on the internet first, that I've met then in real life, it's gone well. So that's good that I know that I'm, that it is happening. Cause I'm friends with Dean in real life. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know. I never did a Zoom or anything with Dean before. I just heard his show and like emailed him and was like, come over to my house.
Yeah.
And then Scott from Truthzilla, that's the other one I know from this community. And we met in real life too. And we've gone camping and stuff together. So And, yeah, it's great. And then there's probably a couple more people too, but yeah, I think as this continues to kind of start to be the norm, I think there's a lot of people who will revert to just this for their whole life. And then I think there's people like us who will use this to meet people and then go on to meet people in person.
Yeah. We're, I mean, even right now, Lanny, I think, is working out plans with Buffalo and Legs from False Reality Check for them to come visit us later this summer. I don't know if you've been brought in on that conversation.
No, but I'd love to come up if they make the trip out.
If they're able to do it and we hammer down some dates, we'll, you know, you'll be the first to hear. And we'll definitely, I want, the more we meet in real life, both you and I and anyone else that we haven't ever met, the more stoked I am. This is really cool. This whole Zoom podcast world, it's really, really cool, especially with what you started this episode with reading that letter, like where it seems that we were able to have a profound impact on someone's real life. Amazing. I'm not downplaying how amazing all of this is, but real life happens in real life. And the more we can see each other in real life, the better things are, in my opinion.
Yeah. I just want to keep meeting people. Like I've said it before, my goal is to go all the way to the other side of the country and back and be able to stay at somebody's house within a day's drive the whole way, you know, and I think I'm getting pretty close to it, you know?
Yeah.
So, Monica Perez says she might be coming to our places this summer. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
So
it's all good stuff.
Yeah. I'm really excited about what's going on. I've been in a way better mood lately. It's been nice here. The weather's nice finally. And I'm able to like go out, and it's hard work, man. Fencing's hard.
Yes.
And, but I'm getting,
you developing a good method for sinking poles.
Well, that post that I asked you about, I dug it when it, there was standing water, like 2 inches below the,
yeah, that's going to change. Surface.
Yeah. It's, but it's changing. It's going down. I got the post dug, but I got to put cement in it.
What about driving them in? What about putting a point on the bottom? It could be real hard, especially without equipment.
Yeah, I don't think I have this. I think you'd have to use some sort of like tractor implement for that, wouldn't you?
I'm sure.
I'm
just trying to imagine it right now.
It's just like, that one's just one post, and it's just holding up some sheep fencing, like a short run. I think I can, and I looked it up online. People are saying, no, you can, if you premix it. I usually just dump a bag of concrete in and then soak it with the hose. That's good enough for me.
That's what I would do.
People are saying you can mix your concrete real thick. So not add very much water, and then put it in a wet hole and it'll actually react better. So
That's what I would worry about. Like, I don't have a shit ton of concrete experience, but I don't know if there's a lot of water down there. Like how long is it going to take for it to set? You know, if it just stays wet for too long, it seems like it could be unstable, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. I had that hole dug, and when I dug it, the water was like almost to the top, and now it's like halfway down. So it'll go down as it dries out. And that's just the one spot where it's super duper wet in the pasture. There's standing water, but then like you get over, I put up another gate yesterday, 'cause I got a fence off the driveway, and, it's cool. There's like old rusty like farm gates and stuff, and I have all the hardware so I can like just reuse stuff. But I'm going to dig a post hole over there yesterday, and I think I'll be able to just bury it with dirt. So, 'cause it's dry enough. Weather's getting nice, and it's good news. So it's really, really pretty out here when it's good weather. So it's a little rough. It was rough this last month and a half or so, where it was like you think it's supposed to be getting nice and it's just raining every day.
It doesn't.
And it's cold, like in the 40s still. But I mean, yesterday it was like 77 degrees, but it was it was humid, man. Like 80% humidity here, something like that. Wow, it's crazy. Yeah,
it kind of felt like that here yesterday. It was 80 degrees, but it was cloudy all day. Yeah. And in fact, I got a bunch more starts in the ground yesterday. I was like, I gotta water these. It's a little too dry. So I just finished watering the garden. And then I realized I was feeling drops of rain. And then it dumped a quarter inch of rain at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, 80 degrees and then rain. That's when you get as humid as you can, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Another good thing too, is that we're like, as far as friendship goes, like it's not just podcast to podcast. It's like people like us being a small enough show that we can, we have like a loyal group of mm-hmm. people that have been around for a long time, and through Telegram and stuff, we actually have like relationships with people who enjoy the show.
Absolutely.
And like, there might even be people in our Telegram that don't even listen anymore, that just participate in the Telegram. And that's fine with me, as long as they're like,
'cause they're just friends.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's good too. And like, yeah, I know False Reality Check went and they're probably going, yeah, they've met people through their Telegram and like seen them in real life. And there's probably people, yeah, they're probably coming to Washington because they need to buy weed again or something, and they live in a state where you're not allowed to have pot.
That might be a side effect of all of it. I know the way it started, I have not followed up on the interactions at all, but Lanny said, man, I wish that they were closer so that we could go visit them. And I was like, yeah, I don't think that'll be happening this year. And then I was like, why don't you just throw it out there that they come visit? Like, you know, they don't have the family obligations that we have. It'll be a little bit easier for them to leave. And what's the worst? They can't make it. You know, like, but just let them know that they're invited here. And I think they've just like, oh yeah, let's see what we can do. I'm sure they'd like to take a trip over this way anyway. They probably need to grab some of that legal Washington weed or whatever while they're here. And maybe they've got three other places they can go along the way, people to see, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, maybe they'll get a chance to see a part of the country they hadn't seen before, and that could be worth it on its own. Yeah, and if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But if it does, that's great.
Yeah. 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 It's a tool that needs to be used properly, just like anything else. And it can connect people and it can isolate people as well. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, see, that's the other side of this coin. You know, I've talked about it on The World As It Is Today. I haven't talked about it with you. But prior to, like, in 2020, I talked a lot of shit about Zoom. Luckily I was just podcasting unplugged at that point. Yeah. I wasn't plugged in. It was just me bitching at my wife. But I said more than once that the pandemic, the lockdowns,
couldn't be possible
without that Zoom, because that Zoom was the technology that allowed us to take the kids out of school without the school stopping. You know what I mean? And I think I even was under the impression, and maybe I was right, and I quit looking at it because I don't want to look at it, but that it was like the Chinese owned stuff.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, I don't know, man, this virus, it comes from China. And now we have software from China that's allowing us to lock down everyone, you know?
It backfired though. Well, maybe not all the way backfired, but I mean, it did connect people like us and allow people to meet people and get active and stuff. But then I think we're a very, very small minority that did that instead of reverting into our home offices and not going out ever again.
I'm glad that I've been able to make use of it. And I make as much use of the outdoors as I always did before. I spend less time, podcasting takes up the time that I used to spend reading about shit on the internet. I'd spend an hour or two almost every day, like basically researching. I never called myself a researcher, but I would spend time like just like going from blog and article to blog and article and try, you know, 'cause I'd listen to podcasts and then I'd spend some time on the computer trying to figure out what I heard was bullshit and what wasn't. unfortunately, most of what I heard I'd proved to be true.
But
the Zoom and all of this, it has its good place. Oh, but the negative side is other people going, sweet, I don't have to meet people anymore. Yeah. I can just do this. I can have Amazon deliver my groceries and Uber deliver my Jack in the Box and or whatever food, you know, like, I don't know. That's people isolating themselves is very sad. And this is definitely a tool that can be used for that.
I mean, everything that's used to isolate people into their own homes is something that we can use. Like if we can get farm implements on Amazon. I mean, that's what I buy most of my stuff from Amazon for the farm. And like, you know, if you can get food delivered and not have to go out to the grocery store, you can get Azure or something like that and like have more time. I mean, we did that Azure only one time because it was kind of expensive and their facilities burned down surprisingly.
Right.
But, I mean, that's how I met the woman who got me the my sheep lady. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's all this this technology of convenience that some would say is negative and isolating people. It's just, you know,
it's everything.
They're using it in a way that they would have been negative and isolated in the first place. It's like the pot thing, you know? And that's why I can't deal with negative people right now. I can't deal with trivial bullshit of people like talking about the nuances of words that I like to use and just like crap like that. Like I'm staying busy. I'm having a great time doing it. You know, and like I said to Shane when we were on his show, or maybe I said it to Conspiracy what's his name from
Kyle Big Dumb.
Big dumb
Kyle.
He was like asking he's a younger guy. He's asking if we had any final advice for him on like getting started in homesteading. I was just like, dude, like it's really easy to get bogged down in like all the negativity of our world in the conspiracy stuff. But it's like people like us like are looking at that stuff because it's entertaining to us and it actually kind of enriches most of our lives. Some people that get it too far into it, it's like look into that void and it looks back at them. But my advice to him was like, dude, just do it. And if the world ends, if we get nuked by North Korea, it's like big deal. Like you went and like I got to go mend some fences today and have fun and like live out my LARPing homestead dreams. You know, and like I'm doing what I wanted to do for the past, you know, however long I got to there, and I'm just having a good time doing it. And it's hard, and I get frustrated, and I yell "fuck" sometimes by myself out in the woods because I can't get my Harbor Freight come along to stretch the fence properly, and like, you know, and like, just have a good time doing it and LARP. And have fun. It's like, cool.
Bottom line, enjoy yourself. Enjoy the moment that you're in. If you're not, whether you're bogged down in what I call the matrix, the real world, as other people call it, or if you're out on your homestead doing your own thing, if you're not enjoying being on a homestead doing your own thing, you shouldn't be doing it. And if you're not enjoying the matrix, then you should try something else, you know. The key is find what like actually works for you, and don't, you know, if someone listened to us and we're like, oh shit, these guys have this homesteading thing down. I'm not really an outdoorsy kind of person, but seems like what I have to do. And then they're out doing it and they hate being outside and they hate the hard work and the sun or the rain
in the first place.
Like they shouldn't be doing that. And, but that doesn't mean there's not a place for them in our world. You know, like Charlie Robinson kind of said something like this towards the end of our show with him. And it's like, and Monica said it to me and Lanny when we were on hers, like that they aren't cut out for this kind of stuff. And it's like, but you guys are welcome into the apocalypse we've kind of gotten away from talking about that since the first episode of you and me.
Yeah.
But we need librarians, and we need people who are contributing in ways other than by the hard work and homestead. Like my encouragement to someone in that position is not necessarily drop your life and start homesteading. That's not my advice if that's not for you. But what would be cool is if you could be close to that. Like if you could still do what you do and be a part of a homestead where you're contributing knowledge rather than labor per se. You know, you're making matrix dollars by doing whatever on your computer or commuting into town and doing whatever. That can help everything. And you could be like a part of it, either living next door or maybe like having a room in the home on the homestead. Like those people are necessary. But they shouldn't be running their own homestead, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe they couldn't run a whole homestead. I don't, I tend to not believe, I kind of want to yell at Monica Perez a lot of the time when she says she can't get things to grow, because anybody can get things to grow. You can
keep trying. That's the key. There it is with her. She wants to grow something. So she should be able to.
Yeah. But I think a lot of the time when people say I can't, it's code for saying I don't want to.
Okay, I get that too. Or maybe they think they do, or they're manifesting that they can't by saying it, kind of a thing as well. Yeah, there's a lot that goes in there. And I think people should just embrace what they really genuinely want out of this life, whether it's hard work and homestead or libraries and cocktails.
Yeah. And if we're living in the end days, like how cool is it that we're the last of the human race or something like that, you know,
right.
We're the last ones.
Right.
So
that's what I hope for. I mean, that's not what I hope for. I hope that everything goes fine, but if that's what happens, that's what I hope for. And that we end up, I mean, like if that is what happens, boy, wouldn't it be great that only the people with attitudes like us get to survive. Like it's going to be a better fucking world that I feel pretty confident in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if that was the case, I think all these black pilled, like, you know, it's all pointless people. If they made it too, they'd be cast into the outer lands eventually, just because they're such a drag and a drain. You know, I think it's important to understand what's going on. That's why, to me, I know it's another plug, but like podcasts like No Agenda, and on a even more hilarious scale, OBDM are super important, because they're just No Agenda just highlights this parade of absolute fucking horrors that's occurring around us in the world. And they just laugh at it and approach it with levity and play jingles and shit like that.
They're
and
not afraid of it.
Yeah.
They're not fearing it. They're not creating fear porn over it.
Yeah.
Something, a line that I think of often is from before I started podcasting with you. I think it would be pre-2020 even. This guy that I know who's pretty intellectual. I said something about the apocalypse. I can't quite remember, but I said something about, maybe it was like my Carrington event thoughts that I mentioned on here before, of like, you know, he's talking about his phone, and I was like, yeah, you know, that's great. But what if the grid goes down? Maybe that's what it was that I suggested. What if the grid goes down? Wouldn't you be bummed that you put all your stock into your phone? And his response was, if that ever happens, I hope that I die. And I said, why is that? And he said, because then humanity will show its true ugly colors, because people are going to be so nasty if the grid ever goes down that I hope that it kills me. And this guy has kids and stuff, you know, and it's like, I remember it just left me with such a, like, that's such a bummer that you hope that you see humanity is so bad that if we lose our technology, then you'd rather die than be subjected to how bad people would become. And I'd like to think that people like that, they're the black-pilled assholes that are out there who will just cave under such a situation, disappear essentially, and only people with decent attitudes could possibly survive into the apocalypse.
Yeah. The remnant.
Yeah. Well, what do you say, man? We did 2 hours, just us, no guest.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. We should do this more often.
Time that we intended to have no guest.
Yeah, first time and then this time. First time and last time.
Yep.
First episode and we should do it once a month or something like this.
I think that'd be cool. It'd be good. It would help our friendship.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. And then we wouldn't have to rely on physical contact when we do actually see each other to ignite the spark, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, just so you know, we will be kissing next time we come face to face. You know, we got to test it out. Like, yeah. You know, it's just...
I'll prep for that. I don't know. I'm going pretty Christian conservative, so I don't know if I'll be able to, but maybe you can sneak it in before I get to too many church services.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
Can we meet up tomorrow?
Yeah. I think do we have anything tomorrow? I don't know.
I think we don't. Well, I don't know.
In podcast news, I got YouTube. I went to upload our Charlie Robinson episode onto YouTube and it wasn't letting me. And it's like, you have too many strikes. And I was like, what? So far, I only have a warning. And then I looked, they gave me a strike for the Jason Burmis episode I did in April of 2021. So I got on my phone last night and I sent a text message.
Wow. Way back.
You're frozen up, but I'll keep going. I sent a text message to my sister who works for YouTube. And I said, hey, can you help me out with the strike? And while we're podcasting right now, she just said, yeah, just send me a screenshot of it and I'll take care of it.
Really?
Yeah.
That simple?
Yeah.
Did it happen?
I haven't sent her the screenshots and stuff yet, but I'm going to.
Huh. I didn't know you you had a connection like that.
Yeah, I'm all connected to tech and
hell yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know how, not that many people watch on YouTube, but it's a resource that I'm going to continue to use until they don't let me to. Follow us on Odyssey if you want to watch the videos. I'll put them all up there.
Yeah. Seems like the way to go.
But yeah, other than that, we'll be back soon. I got a whole bunch of episodes in the can, as they say, that I got to start putting out. I'm going to put out our false reality check episode. I'm going to put out the episode with Lanny. And then we got that Travis... Mateer
hasn't come out yet either,
episode
huh?
yet. Yeah,
cool.
So they're all good. They're all fun to listen to, and yeah, I think we're doing good. I'm really happy with the way the show is going, and I think we got a good. It's hard. Like I think we're not seeing giant numbers, and I just think that there's so many new podcasts in our little world right now that it's hard to get big giant numbers, you know.
Let's be honest, there are over a million fucking podcasts that everyone can choose to listen to, and I'm honored anytime someone does choose ours.
I heard it was like seven. Is it a 7 million or something? I don't know, maybe I'm off. Do you know the actual number,
like total podcasts?
Yeah,
I have no idea. I'm not even thinking total. I'm just thinking within our sphere of things. Conspiracy, unhinged conspiracy, and freedom based, and you know, like the kind of stuff that we touch on. There's like, and I don't mean it as a figure, there's like a million of those out there.
Yeah,
some are small, some are bigger, and like I'm honored anytime someone does check us out, but honestly I think they should be checking all of them out and finding the ones that click best with them. I'm always on that search. I told you we had that. I went to that bear meetup the other day, and the guy asked me if I'd listened to, you know, he said like five different podcasts, and I'm like, I hadn't even heard of any of them. And, you know, like, I'd like to check them all out. But I said to him, I said, you know, I could probably sit and listen to podcasts 24 hours a day and not sleep and take in podcasts 24 hours a day. And I still wouldn't listen to all the ones that I should be, that I should check out, you know. There's so much of it out there. So it's a matter of just dip your toe in on everything. Find the people that really, that you become friends with in your head. And then, you know, dig in on that. Become friends for real.
Yeah. Yeah. It's accessible in most spots. And like, I'm currently like kind of getting rid of some shows that I've listened to for a really long time. And then I'm picking up some new ones. And then, you know, I'm listening to No Agenda, OBDM, and Higher Side Chats, and Pete Quinones. Like, that's about it for my constants, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I have my few constants, and then I'm just always flipping around, especially now that I'm kind of in this world. I get friend requests on Twitter and Instagram from other podcasts, and I always follow back, and then I look at them and I'm like, oh man, this looks awesome. I got to check this out. And then like my subscription list is always growing, and I don't get a chance to listen to all of them. And yeah. It sucks, because I'd like to. I wish I had that kind of time. But well, speaking of time,
yeah, let's, you know, get the fuck out of here.
We should probably get out of here. Good, Adam.
It's great.
Thanks
great
for
talking
this.
To you today. And yeah, I'll see you soon, okay?
Yeah, ditto.
Later, bro.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people or those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass to lay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order, idiots, playing God all day, deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that 7-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell. Every damn one of you is a piece of crap. And you're going to be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.